Hi, welcome to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. In episode 3, season 2, I speak with Sophie Lukacs, and we get to learn about the kora, a beautiful 21-stringed instrument from Western Africa. During this conversation, we get to hear Sophie perform both traditional music and some of her original songs. The story about her fascinating life is very personal and inspiring, and I hope it will resonate with many listeners. This podcast is also available in video format, and the link is in the description of the episode. Please follow this podcast so you can be informed of all the new episodes with a fascinating diversity of musicians and their personal stories of a life in music. Hi, Sophie Lukacs, kora player. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Leah. Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm so glad you agreed to play for us and show us all about the kora. So can you play something first, and then later on we'll talk about how the instrument works?
Yeah, sure. So this first piece is a traditional piece, and it's called Jula Jegere.
Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
So not everyone, some people will be listening to the podcast format and they won't see what you're doing.
Okay.
So if you could describe a little bit what the instrument looks like and how you
start. Sure. So for the listeners of the podcast, I'll just talk a little bit about the instrument I'm playing. So kora has 21 strings and it's a diatonic. And we have on the bottom, so the closest to the person playing it, we have the C, and then alternating, and then the three on the top on the right. So, and we're playing with our thumbs and our forefingers, and basically the left hand thumb is usually playing the accompaniment, and that is kind of going all the time, and also with the right thumb, which is has like a little bit more liberty, and then you're playing the melody and improvising on top. So the song you just heard, obviously the that's always going. And those are the thumbs that are playing that. So when you're starting out to learn, I guess the difficulty is the melodies are quite simple in the traditional pieces. You can catch those fairly simply with your four fingers, but then integrating that with the thumbs that, you know, that are going all the time is a little bit more tricky. And then the next level is, of course, is improvisation, which has a huge role in the tradition of core players. And that's yeah, that's a little bit tricky. That takes a little bit longer to learn.
So to follow up with the construction of the instrument, it's sort of a cross between a lute and a harp, would you say?
Yes, I mean, it's like historically and, you know, in ethnomusicology, it's written as a harp lute. It's a kind of African harp lute that dates back a little bit longer. It's from the 13th century.
Could you hold up the body so we can see?
Yes.
Beautiful.
This is a calabas. And I have my mic. Mm-hmm. So I have my mic there on the bridge. And yeah, it's every core is unique. Obviously, the size of the calabas, they used to be much larger, which produces a much nicer sound. But, you know, as things evolved, like we're traveling with them, it's difficult to carry them on planes and with the huge calabases. So they've become smaller. And there's even like little mini ones, which sound kind of terrible because, like, they don't resonate. The neck, traditionally, they were leather rings for tuning. And I guess in the past, like, 30 years, they started switching to guitar keys, tuning keys. The leather strings were incredibly difficult to tune. Can you imagine with 21 strings?
Yeah.
So you would try, you know, you'd be trying to to tune one up, and then they would, like, all slide, or one would slide, and you would spend hours. That's how I was initiated into, into my core studies. And then, no, I'm sorry, I don't have the strength. It was also very, like, physical to move the yeah.
I had heard that tourists would go to West Africa, hear the kora, love it, buy it one, and then not be able to tune it when they got home.
I'm sure
it would just be decorative.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, with the leather rings. I mean, yeah, it was very difficult, especially also, you know, not to talk of the when the strings break with the leather strings, with the traditional leather rings, to change that. I mean, it's a whole process. You, like, stick this, you know, this sharp object to, you know, get some space, and then the whole thing. It's quite complicated, but a lot of core players in Mali now use the keys.
So you just recorded, and it'll be coming out soon, your first solo album.
Yes, it was a long time in the coming. I studied in Mali for 6 years, and I guess I started working on the album about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's their original compositions, I guess, you know, influenced by obviously the Malian music and the traditional music, but also classical music that I grew up in. And, you know, I think it's using the kora in a very different way. It's I think the hardest thing about finding my voice with the kora was that it's an instrument that is so rooted in the tradition. And, you know, unlike the, you know, the piano or the guitar or, you know, even the violin, it's, you know, we're accustomed to it being used in many different genres. And the kora still very much in the tradition. And so kind of taking it out of its tradition and trying to find my own sound was very difficult. But I think I succeeded, and you know, I recorded it in Mali with some really amazing musicians, and I'm really excited to share it with everyone.
Congratulations. And can you give us a taste of some of those tunes?
Yes, of course. So this song is called Before You. Normally it would be played with a bass, calabas, and a djelingoni, which is like the banjo predecessor. So if you've seen like Bela Fleck's film,
I
where
did, yeah.
Before there was you, I was pretty fine. I kept to myself, my heart was just mine. I could be alone by myself. I wasn't really only alone. Now I am blue, I'm lonely with you. Now I am blue. Stay the night, stay the night, stay a while. Can you marry my other man, all my love? Can you stay a while for a while, for a life? You don't really know, usually don't, please just know. Before there was you, I was pretty free, no one to teach me, love couldn't reach me. Now that has more pleasure with you, there's more pain from loving you. Now I am blue, I'm lonely with you. Now I am blue, I'm lonely without you. Can you stay the night, stay the night, stay a while? Can you carry my other man, all my love? Can you stay a while for a while, for a life? You don't really know you should go, please just go. Can you stay the night, stay the night, stay a while? Can you carry my all of me, all my love? Can you stay a while for a while, for a life? You don't really know you should go, please just go.
Beautiful. You have a lovely voice.
Thank
Did you do much singing before you started doing songwriting?
Well, I guess when I started the violin quite young, I was doing a lot of like orff and like kodai, and so
Okay.
there was singing involved. But I didn't, you know, and then I played the guitar when I was kind of 11, 12, 13, so I was singing. But I only started, I think, working seriously on it about 4 years ago, and studying with different coaches and teachers. Yeah, I think as an instrumentalist, especially with the violin, and then this, it wasn't like a natural transition. I always really wanted to write songs and you know, be a singer-songwriter, but yeah, it was definitely, it was challenging, I think, with the violin. As an instrumentalist, like you can kind of hide behind the instrument sometimes, or anyways, I was. And so with singing, it was really kind of a making myself a lot more vulnerable, and with the songs I was writing too. So that was challenging, but also like amazing as well, because it was kind of the goal.
So when you first heard the chora the first time live, had you heard it before in records, or were you aware of?
So yeah, so my story goes back to 2008 actually, and I was in Burkina Faso. I was studying McGill University. I was not really sure what I wanted to do or could study, or I was a little bit searching, and I was doing a program in like international development, and I had gone to Burkina Faso for a few months, and that's I heard the chora there, and I was introduced to so many like amazing Malian musicians, and I became kind of obsessed with the chora, and I wanted to start playing, but it didn't really seem realistic, and I think I also didn't have the courage. I wasn't ready, and few years went by. I was studying to become a doctor, and I wasn't really enjoying it. I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I was living in New York at the time, and I was kind of seeing the chora everywhere, and I thought, or maybe it wasn't everywhere. My dad was asking me about this the other day. I think it was just like I saw it twice, and I was like, this is a sign. I need a lesson. There was a concert at the Met Museum, and it was a player from Mali, Yakuba Sisoko, and I went up to him and I said, I need a lesson, and that was in 2013. And I remember the first time I held the chora, it was in his apartment in Harlem, and after that I kind of knew right away, like I needed to play this instrument. And I think I probably needed to play music again, because I had you know, I had decided not to play the violin or continue, you know, playing professionally, and so I think this was my way back to music. And I mean, what a way back to music. So after that, I spent 1 year trying to take lessons in New York. I didn't have a chora. I remember I lived in Brooklyn, and the teacher lived in the Bronx, and we would meet like in the middle in the city. You know, I was like carrying the chora around. I didn't have a case or anything. I was just kind of lugging this huge chora around, and
Where, excuse me, where would you meet? Like in a park, or I mean.
literally we would meet in the park. Once we met in Central Park, and then we met in the like in Alphabet City. We would just meet in a park that was, you know, like kind of in the middle, and then I knew pretty quickly that I really needed to go back to West Africa, but I was a little I knew right away that I, you know, this was it, but I had a little bit of trouble accepting that, because you know, my parents have, you know, thought I kind of lost my mind. I was, you know, going to be a doctor, and now, you know, I'm kind of playing the chora, or what even is this instrument? They were a little bit worried, and I was too. I didn't really I didn't really trust myself, I think, or have the courage to make this kind of decision. So I was kind of, kind of moving, treading carefully. And then, Toumani Diabaté, he gave a master class in Paris, and my mom said, you have to go. It's too many. And, by that point, I had, I think I knew every single one of his notes. I had listened so much to the repertoire. And so I went, and he invited me to Mali, and that was it. I was kind of a no-brainer. And so I went, and that was September 2015.
Really, you talked about bravery. You're so brave to do something like that. And when I was looking, I was actually interested in interviewing a kora player because I had some kora albums and I've always loved that sound. And on this series, I like to talk to all kinds of different musicians. But when I saw your story and that you used to be a violinist and that you didn't grow up with this music of West Africa and you really immersed yourself and you learned Bambara as well, the language that's spoken in Mali. How is that said? Did I say that wrong?
Yeah, no, it's right. Yeah, it's actually in Bamara. It's Bamanankan,
Okay.
but yeah, I mean, we say Bambara. Yeah, you said it perfectly.
So that must have been incredible as well. I mean, it's a completely different language group from your other languages.
Yeah, the language was really hard. I'm pretty good with languages. I picked them up quite quickly, but Bambara was very difficult. I think, I obviously had no references. Yeah, I guess the fact that I had, quite a solid foundation in music and classical music, well, it was kind of a double-edged sword. I thought that I would learn the kora very quickly. I thought, if you play playing the violin, you learn quite complicated pieces, you memorize it, in comparison, the Mandeng melodies seem quite simple, but this is very deceiving, of course, because to play any instrument well takes a very long time, and the kora, is its own kind of, beast, or its own, like every instrument has its own, kind of
Special challenges.
and I of course completely underestimated how challenging it would be. Not only was I learning a new instrument, a new musical culture with completely different like idioms and everything, I was living in a completely different environment. So it was like everything you knew, okay, you kind of put that aside because it's not, you can't really use it here. And in hindsight, it was an incredible experience, and which taught me so much. I thought I was going to learn about the core, but really it was, really changed my life. But yeah, it was very challenging. Very challenging. Just kind of the physical climate or the geographical climate in and of itself in Mali. It's the sub-Saharan desert. It's very, very hot, and so we're kind of all like the physical ailments, all of the typhoid and malaria and all of that in the beginning. It was kind of nonstop. And then the challenge of trying to learn an instrument which doesn't, the pedagogy is completely different from classical music. So here, you kind of go through the school, or you do the Suzuki, you do the grades 1 to 10, and there are teachers, and everything is there's not really kind of this like air of secrecy, or that it's, anybody can learn to study the violin. And with the kora, because I think, well, it's quite complex, but it's there are no partitions, it's all oral. So especially in the beginning, you need teachers. you really need teachers to pass on the knowledge and to show you the basics. And so, there's no school, there's no conservatory. You just kind of have to, you know, immerse yourself in the media and kind of find the teachers who, you know, you like their style. They can, you know, they maybe have a good way of teaching. So it's all of this very informal, you know, kind of community that's, you kind of have to figure it out yourself. And, you know, there was nobody who was, nobody could really help me because, you know, other people hadn't really done, you know, this intensive study, I think, in the Quora. So I think most people I know who play the Quora go for a few weeks and then return home. And I said, no, I want to learn it, like everything, you know, I want to master it. And it's, you know, so I treated it kind of as a conservatory. You know, I'm going, it's going to be the Quora, only the Quora all the time. And so, you know, I think the advantages were I was, you know, completely immersed in it. And, you know, I learned how to speak Bambara, not fluently, but enough, you know, to get by. And, but yeah, I mean, it, yeah. You know, so there were the advantages and the disadvantages. It was also incredibly isolating at times. Like, yeah. So.
And you were there during the pandemic, the beginning of the pandemic as well.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was there I was there for a year last year, and that, you know, by now, you know, I have you know, good friends, and it's very different from when I first arrived, Yeah, so it was quite different, but I was there this year, and I was mostly working on the album and doing other things. I teach a lot. I teach like Pilates and do lots of other stuff. Yeah. And then,
are you teaching the Quora as well?
I have some students, some women students, a little bit all over the world, and they're, yeah, I've had a. Malian students who come sometimes to the house, or so that's actually really nice. I really love teaching. So yeah.
And let's talk about the violin. So that was your first instrument?
Yes, it was my first instrument. Was 3, 4, and I grew up in a very musical family. We have a lot of musicians in Budapest my mom took me to see a lot of music, a lot of classical music, and I saw this incredible Hungarian folk band called Muzsikás. And if anyone is listening, they should look them up. They're probably the best Hungarian folk group. They're incredible. And they were playing in Toronto at the Ashkenazi Music Festival, and they were, I mean, and I told my mom, you know, I want to do what that guy's doing. It looked, you know, so fun. Of course, then the classical repertoire was not always as much fun as how much they made it look. But yeah, so I started studying classical and played in like a lot of orchestras up until Miguel. I played in an orchestra there as well, and then I, you know, took a few years break from music, although I guess I never really left. Never really left music. And
were you playing violin in different styles when you were like a teenager?
So it was mostly classical, and then a little bit of like Celtic. Mm-hmm. In the summers at camps, at music camps.
But not Hungarian music at all?
That came later on. No, it was really like kind of pure classical. Mm-hmm. And then later, later on when I started playing the Quora was when, I mean, I guess this sounds kind of ridiculous to some people, but it was probably when I first realized that I could improvise on the violin and I didn't need to just play classical music. And for me, this was like, wow, this was a revelation. And so I started playing, I started learning a lot of the Hungarian folk music. And when I first started playing the choir, when I was first in Mali, I was playing the violin. But then I kind of put it aside because I really wanted to concentrate on the choir. But I hope to start playing the violin again. I would like to, but at some point, yeah.
Sophie, do you think that because you're learning by ear so much, your time in Mali, that when you went back to the violin, it was easier to just trust that you could play by ear?
Yes, I think that's part of it, but I think when I even before I went to Mali, I remember I took my violin out and I was playing along with like Ali Farka Touré, who's legendary Malian guitarist. I think it was also like rediscovering the incredible joy of music, and that I had maybe lost that a little bit with the violin, thinking, I had to play classical music, and if it wasn't, good enough, then I couldn't play the violin. And so I think in many ways, the choir and the way I learned it and the way they learned it, it was so different, so kind of opposite to the way I studied classical music. It was really liberating. I just remember I'd been in Mali for a few years, and I was playing a concert with this incredible balafon player, who actually tours with the Kronos Quartet. He's part of a trio of Mali musicians who play with the Kronos Quartet, and it's an amazing collaboration. And we were playing, and in Mali, in the often you're playing, you take turns soloing, improvising. And he was like, okay, Sophie, like, vas-y. And I was like, no. And I think I started playing a solo of like Tumani, or one that I had memorized. And he was like, no. He's like, joue. And I was like, no, I can't. It's not, and that was kind of a breaking point for me, where I realized, okay, it's now or never. I have to let go of these ideas of perfection and playing these kind of composed melodies. You have to improvise, and that was incredibly freeing as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So a balafon is a with mallets.
Yes. Yeah. Wooden. Like, I guess kind of like the xylophone. As old as the kora, and they are the pentatonic but also diatonic, like the really huge ones, and they're two rows. Originated in Guinea, also in that,
like in Mali. Is that instrument featured in, you mentioned the Bela Fleck movie, Throw Down Your Heart. Was that the instrument featured in there where the whole village puts together this huge instrument? And it's in two rows that I remember.
I can't remember. I watched it quite a long time ago, but I can send the link, and maybe we can post it. The album with Kronos is a really nice introduction.
Yeah,
kind of a bridge between classical. Yeah.
So in terms of violin, why do you think you didn't pursue violin professionally?
Oh my God! Biggest regret of my life. Really? You know what? I mean, to be perfectly honest, I was not mature enough when I was a youth, and I really loved music, but the real answer is a bit longer. I don't know if it's I think if we had stayed in Budapest, I would be a violinist. When we grew up, we emigrated to Toronto, and I felt a little bit as an outsider, in the at my school and community where I grew up, there weren't a lot of people who played music at school, and it wasn't really considered like cool. And I loved orchestra on the weekends. It was like really my favorite, part of the week. But I think I was so kind of influenced by my peers, and I really wanted to fit in, and so I wasn't really able to embrace classical music or music. I think I loved it, and I was, I think I had a really good ear, and my mom saw that, and she really kind of fostered and encouraged that. But it wasn't enough. It has to come from you, and I think I wasn't ready. So it was during university when I think I really, really started to dive into music and really kind of listen and have the patience to really hear it. I think I was a little bit too busy worrying about what other people were thinking of me to be able to be a musician at that point. Mm-hmm. That's the truth, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kept it a secret. Like, no one, I don't think people really knew in high school that I played violin. Like, it was,
really? Yeah.
I understand completely. Yeah. And it's very lonely, right? The hours you have to put in. And that certainty about the future, if you're following this path to be a classical violinist, that it's very competitive. And
yeah. I mean, I think I didn't even really get to that. I was kind of like, I had my teacher when I was 10. She was like, she's so talented. She really she could go to Juilliard. I think my mom was like, wow. But for me, I was like, I'm like a soccer player, and I'm more interested in being popular, and which is, that's really kind of how it was at that age. And I used to have a lot of regret about it, but I found my way back to music, and
it's a big way. Yeah. I think, like so many choices in life, you're always giving, every time you accept something, you're giving something up at every turn that we take in our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you're happy with where you are, in your life, the regrets don't really serve any purpose. Oh. And so I'm going to play a song called Falling. And that is... Storming a friend of love, fired the quiet of the dawn. I could keep bank white and have to face the morning day. Took a chance on up with you, and we had your demons too. And you showed me that was room for two. I am falling in love. Do you know, really know what you've done to me? 'Cause I am falling for you. If you knew what I heard and why I do, if you knew, would you let me fall without you? Seems like we're being tested too many days apart. Love on trial, ain't for the faint of heart. I know I've learned you by now, it's forgiveness too. Never mind, someone like you. Wanna hold you close, but what you need most is space to grow us up to. Who am I to intrude? I am falling, falling in love. Do you know with no one done to me? Cause I am falling for you. If you knew what hurt in the way I do, if you knew, would you let me fall without you?
Thank you. They seem like very personal songs. Do you want to speak to some of that or not?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I think art is always personal most of the time, and anyway, my process of writing music is, and I don't know that there were songs that are, I think, like universal in their pain or in their beauty, and I think there's a reason why like 95% of songs are written about love.
So back in Montreal, you're playing some gigs. What's the scene like for West African music and collaborations?
Oh, this is a really good question because it's what I'm trying to figure out right now. And also, yeah, just also with my music, I used to believe that I had to play with West African musicians if I'm playing the kora. And I guess it's been a journey, and it's evolved. Like I believe that less. I think also the more confidence I have as a musician, I think I'm less stuck in these like paradigms, like, well, if I'm playing the kora, you know, I need to be playing with a Malian or a Senegalese. Of course, it's great, you know, I love playing in Mali, but when I'm here, I think the music needs to evolve and like cross barriers, and so I play with a lot of different musicians, and I'm trying to kind of figure out the formula for my group and how to show the album in Canada. And right now it's with a Cuban and a Hungarian, Cuban percussionist and a Hungarian cellist. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, I mean, there are lots of wonderful musicians here, and you know, the like kind of world music scene, and is pretty strong, and there's, you know, there are some great musicians from Senegal and Mali, but I'm also interested in, yeah, in like exchange and like collaborative process, and I think that can come from, I can come from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautifully expressed, Sophie. Well, I want to thank you so much for this conversation today and playing for us. Would you have any final words of advice for like a young person who is kind of on the path that you're on, at a crossroads, you know, trying to, you know, find something completely different musical?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it sounds a little bit cliche, but like, just, you know, listen to your intuition or your gut. If you feel strongly connected to an instrument or a type of music, then you should pursue it, and don't worry too much about, how it's going to work out. And I think art cannot really like thrive with all those like kind of like limits or the limit, and you just have to, yeah, I think you have to keep doing it and keep playing and you know, keep searching, and that sounds like terrible advice, but you know, trust your, yeah, just I think keep coming back to why you started to play music, or why you're connected to the music, and it should work out.
That's great advice. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you so much.
Season 1 of this podcast had 20 episodes, and season 2 continues with a really interesting mix of musicians talking about their lives and careers, with perspectives on overcoming challenges, finding inspiration and connection through a life so enriched with music. Please follow this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to be informed about each new episode.